Prologue. Painted aircraft flew through the core of the world. Lindsay stood in knee-high grass, staring upward to follow their flight. Flimsy as kites, the pedal-driven ultralights dipped and soared through the free-fall zone, far overhead. Beyond them, across the diameter of the cylindrical world, the curving landscape glowed with the yellow of wheat and the speckled green of cotton fields. Lindsay shaded his eyes against the sunlit glare from one of the world's long windows. An aircraft, its wings elegantly stenciled in blue feathers on white fabric, crossed the bar of light and swooped silently above him. He saw the pilot's long hair trailing as she pedaled back into a climb. Lindsay knew she had seen him. He wanted to shout, to wave frantically, but he was watched. His jailers caught up with him, his wife and his uncle. The two old aristocrats walked with painful slowness. His uncle's face was flushed. He had turned up his heart's pacemaker.
"You ran," he said. "You ran."
"I stretched my legs," Lindsay said with bland defiance. "House arrest cramps me." His uncle peered upward to follow Lindsay's gaze, shading his eyes with an age-spotted hand. The bird-painted aircraft was hovering over the Sours, a marshy spot in the agricultural panel, where rot had set into the soil.
"You're watching the Sours, eh? Where your friend Constantine's at work? They say he signals you from there."
"Philip works with insects, Uncle, not cryptography." Lindsay was lying. He depended on Constantine's covert signals for news during his house arrest. He and Constantine were political allies. When the crackdown came, Lindsay had been quarantined within the grounds of his family's mansion. But Philip Constantine had irreplaceable ecological skills. He was still free, working in the Sours. The long internment had pushed Lindsay to desperation. He was at his best among people, where his adroit diplomatic skills could shine. In isolation, he had lost weight. His high cheekbones stood out in sharp relief, and his gray eyes had a sullen, vindictive glow. His sudden run had tousled his modishly curled black hair. He was tall and rangy, with the long chin and arched, expressive eyebrows of the Lindsay clan. Lindsay's wife, Alexandrina, took his arm. She was dressed fashionably, in a long pleated skirt and white medical tunic. Her pale, clear complexion showed health without vitality, as if her skin were a perfectly printed paper replica. Mummified kiss curls adorned her forehead.
"You said you wouldn't talk politics, James," she told the older man. She looked up at Lindsay. "You're pale, Abelard. He's upset you."
"Am I pale?" Lindsay said. He drew on his shaper diplomatic training. Color seeped into his cheeks. He widened the dilation of his pupils and smiled with a gleam of teeth. His uncle stepped back, scowling. Alexandrina leaned on Lindsay's arm.
"I wish you wouldn't do that," she told him. "It frightens me."
She was 50 years older than Lindsay, and her knees had just been replaced. Her mechanist Teflon kneecaps still bothered her. Lindsay shifted his bound volume of printout to his left hand. During his house arrest, he had translated the works of Shakespeare into modern circumsolar English. The elders of the Lindsay clan had encouraged him in this. His antiquarian hobbies, they thought, would distract him from plotting against the state. To reward him, they were allowing him to present the work to the museum. He had seized on the chance to briefly escape his house arrest. The museum was a hotbed of subversion. It was full of his friends, preservationists they called themselves, a reactionary youth movement with a romantic attachment to the art and culture of the past. They had made the museum their political stronghold. Their world was the Mare Serenitatis Circumlunar Corporate Republic, a 200-year-old artificial habitat orbiting the Earth's moon. As one of the oldest of humankind's nation-states in space, it was a place of tradition, with the long habits of a settled culture. But change had burst in, spreading from newer, stronger worlds in the asteroid belt and the rings of Saturn. The Mechanist and Shaper superpowers had exported their war into this quiet city-state. The strain had split the population into factions. Lindsay's preservationists against the power of the radical old, rebellious plebes against the wealthy aristocracy. Mechanist sympathizers held the edge in the Republic. The radical old held power from within their governing hospitals. These ancient aristocrats, each well over a century old, were patched together with advanced mechanist hardware, their lives extended with imported prosthetic technology. But the medical expenses were bankrupting the Republic. Their world was already deep in debt to the medical mech cartels. The Republic would soon be a mechanist client state. But the Shapers used their own arsenals of temptation. Years earlier, they had trained and indoctrinated Lindsay and Constantine. Through these two friends, the leaders of their generation, the Shapers exploited the fury of the young, who saw their birthrights stolen for the profit of the Mechanists. Tension had mounted within the Republic until a single gesture could set it off. Life was the issue, and death would be the proof. Lindsay's uncle was winded. He touched his wrist monitor and turned down the beating of his heart.
"No more stunts," he said. "They're waiting in the museum."
He frowned.
"Remember, no speeches. Use the prepared statement."
Lindsay stared upward. The bird-painted ultralight went into a power dive.
"No!"
Lindsay shouted. He threw his book aside and ran. The ultralight smashed down in the grass outside the ringed stone seats of an open-air amphitheater. The aircraft lay crushed, its wings warped in a dainty convulsion of impact.
"Vera!"
Lindsay shouted. He tugged her body from the flimsy wreckage. She was still breathing. Blood gushed from her mouth and nostrils. Her ribs were broken. She was choking. He tore at the ring-shaped collar of her preservationist suit. The wire of the collar cut his hands. The suit imitated spacesuit design. Its accordioned elbows were crushed and stained. Little white moths were flying up from the long grass. They milled about, as if drawn by the blood. Lindsay brushed a moth from her face and pressed his lips to hers. The pulse stopped in her throat. She was dead.
"Vera,"
he groaned.
"Sweetheart, you're burned."
A wave of grief and exultation hit him. He fell into the sun-warmed grass, holding his sides. More moths sprang up. She had done it. It seemed easy now. It was something the two of them talked about 100 times, deep into the night at the museum, or in bed after their adultery. Suicide, the last protest. An enormous vista of black freedom opened up in Lindsay's head. He felt a paradoxical sense of vitality.
"Darling, it won't be long."
His uncle found him kneeling. The older man's face was gray.
"Oh," he said, "this is vile. What have you done?"
Lindsay got dizzily to his feet.
"Get away from her."
His uncle stared at the dead woman.
"She's dead. You damned fool, she was only 26.
Lindsay yanked a long dagger of crudely hammered metal from his accordioned sleeve. He swept it up and aimed it at his own chest.
"In the name of humanity and the preservation of human values, I freely choose to..."
His uncle seized his wrist. They struggled briefly, glaring into one another's eyes, and Lindsay dropped the knife. His uncle snatched it out of the grass and slipped it into his lab coat.
"This is illegal," he said. "You'll face weapons charges."
Lindsay laughed shakily.
"I'm your prisoner, but you can't stop me if I choose to die. Now or later, what does it matter?" "You're a fanatic."
His uncle watched him with bitter contempt.
The Shaper schooling holds to the end, doesn't it? Your training cost the Republic a fortune, and you use it to seduce and murder.
She died clean. Better to burn in a rush than live 200 years as a mechanist wirehead.
The elder Lindsay stared at the horde of white moths that swarmed on the dead woman's clothing.
We'll nail you for this somehow. You and that upstart plebe, Constantine.
Lindsay was incredulous.
You stupid mech bastard. Look at her. Can't you see that you've killed us already? She was the best of us. She was our muse.
His uncle frowned.
Where did all these insects come from?
He bent and brushed the moths aside with wrinkled hands. Lindsay reached forward suddenly and snatched a filigreed gold locket from the woman's neck. His uncle grabbed his sleeve.
It's mine!
Lindsay shouted. They began to fight in earnest. His uncle broke Lindsay's clumsy stranglehold and kicked Lindsay twice in the stomach. Lindsay fell to his knees. His uncle picked up the locket, wheezing.
You assaulted me,
he said, scandalized.
You used violence against a fellow citizen.
He opened the locket. A thick oil ran out onto his fingers.
No message,
he said in surprise. He sniffed at his fingers.
Perfume?
Lindsay knelt, panting in nausea. His uncle screamed. White moths were darting at the man, clinging to the oily skin of his hands. There were dozens of them. They were attacking him. He screamed again and batted at his face. Lindsay rolled over twice, away from his uncle. He knelt in the grass, shaking. His uncle went down, convulsing like an epileptic. Lindsay scrambled backward on his hands and knees. The old man's wrist monitor glared red. He stopped moving. The white moths crawled over his body for a few moments, then flew off one by one, vanishing into the grass. Lindsay lurched to his feet. He looked behind him, across the meadow. His wife was walking toward them slowly through the grass.